Welcome to the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast, where we learn from real estate professionals across the industry. They will share about how they got into real estate, the big wins they have celebrated, the mistakes they have made along the way, and the advice they have for anyone following in their footsteps. Money really does grow on trees. Hey everybody, it's William Holland here for another episode of the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast. Today I've got a special guest, Pete Reist with RealVest Properties. I'll let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about what you got going on.
Well, thanks for having me here, William. I really appreciate it. So I guess the reason you wanted to have me on is probably to talk about land flipping. And that's kind of our primary business model, and it's how we're generating all of our returns and, with real estate investing. So if you want, I can sort of break down what that is and how we, what our particular spin on it is.
Yeah, I would love to hear that. At first, I'd love to hear a little bit more about who you are. And so you live in California, is that right?
Yeah, I live in California, San Diego County. So right by the beach in a place called Del Mar. If you ever been out here, they have a horse racing track right near here. But so yeah, it's a beautiful spot, and I've kind of lived out this way since the year 1998. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, and then after college moved out here and never looked back.
That's cool. Yeah, I like Pennsylvania, and I also like California. I've been to both of them. So one of my goals is to travel to all 50 states. So I'm getting close.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's and we love traveling too. So we've done most of them. I think we're probably at 42 or something, but we're getting there.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm about at 40. So we'll have to race to see who gets to 50 first. So I know you do land flipping now, and that's going to be the highlight of the show, getting to talk about that topic. But I know you had a journey to get to that point. So tell us a little bit more about how you started out in real estate.
Yeah, I guess my journey in real estate started like a lot of people when we bought our first home. And this was in the year 2000. When I say we, it's myself and my wife. And bought it here in San Diego County, more of a rural town in north part of the county. And we bought it for $195,000, just a standard three-bedroom, two-bath, 1,700 square foot home. But it was a great home for us to start with. I think we bought it for $195,000 and held it for 2 years. I did some minor improvements to the property myself, with very questionable quality improvements. But we did actually end up increasing the value of the property, and probably the market went up a little bit too. But we ended up selling it for about $250,000. And thought I was a real, like a real estate mogul, because, $50,000 at that point was like just a ton of money. And then took that money and kind of parlayed it into the next home, which was bigger and needed more work. So we did that one, and we, fixed that one up and everything, improved the value on that. And then we started flipping homes in the, kind of the early 2000s. And that was our primary business for a while. So buying and selling homes, fixing them up, and really learned that business pretty well. And, contrary to popular belief, I know flipping is so popular now, but it was actually really popular then too. Maybe not as popular, but there were a lot of people doing it, and there were a lot of shows on TV about it as well back then. So we got really interested in it. And that was a really good business for a while, until the market crashed. So the market crashed around here, and as it did many places in the country, about 2007-ish, and it kind of fell off the cliff, and we were like, well, this is not really the best business to be in right now. So luckily, I had gotten my broker's license a couple years before that, and it was primarily just to help me find deals. Like, I was able to show myself properties. We were buying most of our deals on the market, on the MLS. I was able to show myself the properties to look to potential deals, and able to get that buyer side commission. So that's why I did it. But when the market crashed, it was good because it gave me kind of another avenue in order to generate revenue in real estate, which a lot of people were struggling with. So at that point, and then I just decided to focus on being an REO listing broker, which meant essentially just selling the foreclosures for the banks, because that's the stuff that was selling at that point. Like, there were lots of foreclosures and lots of banks wanting to sell these properties. And that's what I did. So that's why I focused on that for a number of years, and eventually transitioned into pretty much just focusing on finding deals for other large investment companies. So I knew what they wanted. I knew what they were looking for because they were buying flip type properties. And so I was getting as many deals as I could locked up for them. And that was a good business for a while. And I like that business because it's non-emotional and it's just simply about the numbers. And if the numbers work, they were, you know, excited for the deal and they closed cash and it was just less drama that way. So it did that for a number of years and then got sidetracked, not sidetracked, but sidetracked in a good way into another business that I ran with my wife about travel blogging and blogger training, online education business. And we did a ton of traveling with that business, about 150 days out of the year as a family of five. We were traveling kind of all over the world. So it was a really cool time and a little bit exhausting, but exhausting in a good way. We got a little, we got the itch to get back into real estate and real estate investing. And I started reading some stuff online about land flipping. And I saw some people talking about, hey, I bought this property for $10,000 and I sold it for $30,000. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I could do that type of thing. That sounds like a great return. If that's what's typical, you know, I'd love to do that myself. So I bought a training program on it and just kind of dove all in and then, you know, started doing it myself. So we actually ended up doing our first resale transaction, a land flipping transaction in March of 2021. And then that first year that in 2021, we ended up doing about a little over $1.2 million in revenue. And that's about 50% gross profit margin. So on average, we were able to buy a property and then double it. So that's our, you know, kind of always our benchmark. And then in 2022, did about $3.5 million and just shy of the 50% gross profit margin as well. So 2023, looking to do $10 million. So things are ramping up quickly.
Yeah, I love that. So you mentioned something just now that we didn't get to talk about before the show started airing. You talked about a blogging business. So
yes.
what were you doing for that? And you said you were traveling 150 days out of the year. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. 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 It was a great time. My wife had been, had her own blog since I think 2010 or 2012, somewhere in there. And she would, she was kind of at the beginning of all that and really kind of, help create the market for that. But she was doing just a lot of different things and getting a lot of these different opportunities, you know, brands and companies and everything were reaching out to her always to work with her. And so she would get paid for all these opportunities and she was making a lot of money just off of, you know, doing content on her blog. And
that's incredible.
So we were getting tons of people that were kind of asking her, you know, how they do it and everything. And we decided like the demand is there. So I feel like we could, if we kind of combine forces, we could put together a training program and kind of start a whole business along those lines. And then we really got into travel blogging associated with that. So basically we would go out to resorts or a city or, you know, some tourist or visitor bureau would reach out to us and we would go out, fly out there, create content and, you know, kind of feature it on the blog and social media and stuff like that. And then we would train other bloggers how to do that as well. So that's that. Yeah. So that was a really cool time. You know, and we still love to travel, probably just not that much because, you know, half the year almost, it seemed like we were away from home.
Yeah, that's incredible though. I feel like that would be a dream for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. Great, great times. And for our kids too, you know, because we always traveled all together as a family. And so our kids too, I think they learn a lot about the world that they may not have learned, you know, just sitting in a regular classroom.
For sure. Yeah. I've been able to travel to Taiwan, Canada, Kenya, and Spain. And
wow, that's great.
So South America is still on the list, but hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been to Mexico?
I have not, and I'm in Texas, so I'm pretty close by. I need
to
get
down
there
close.
Too.
Yeah, Mexico, there's a really cool spots in Mexico. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's cool. Definitely, I would love to hear more about that later on. And
yeah,
you have to tell me what the blog is. I'll have to go check it out.
Yeah, it's Lovely Life. It's called, is her blog. It's a lovelylife.com. So.
Okay, very cool. So the main events, land flipping, you mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. So tell us kind of the mechanics of that, you know, how are you sourcing deals? Are you adding value to those deals? Are you doing any CapEx? And, how are you making the returns?
So here's a business model. It's actually pretty simple in a way, but simple, but maybe not as easy as it may appear when I explain this. But basically, what we're doing is we're building a list. We're identifying an area, a potential area that we think might be good for this, and we're looking for rural areas with some good activity, basically. So we create a list, and we do that in we use an company called DataTree. It's a First American company. So we pull these lists, and they pull from all the just the public record ownership records, and we're doing some basic scrubbing of the list. We're sorting by acreage size, vacant land, obviously. So we're doing vacant land. We're a lot of times now we're looking at 10 acres and above, and then we scrub out kind of obvious non-sellers. They could be people like it could be like a company like owned by the railroad or owned by a city or the utility company, something like that. But we know that those people aren't going to sell to us. So we take those out of the list. And then what we do is we send them out, we send a letter out to these people, and it's a two-page letter. And page one is kind of explaining what we do and why we're contacting them, how we can help them. And page two is an actual purchase agreement. So has an actual offer on there, offer price for their property. And our offer is that we buy cash and we close quickly and we make it very easy for them. So then after we send out that mail, and we send out a lot of mail at this point. At this point, we're sending out about 50,000 letters per month. And then, the leads start coming in. People call back, they'll sometimes mail back the agreement, sometimes they'll email or text. Sometimes they'll call and be angry that we offered them too low of an amount, something like that. So we get all kinds of the responses. But bottom line is the action, the activity starts. And then we evaluate what comes in, see what we can put together deals with. And then we'll get under contract and we will do our due diligence process, send out a photographer to walk the property, get drone shots, and make a bunch of calls and go through a whole checklist of stuff that we check out. We also always work with a local real estate broker, land broker, to help us evaluate the property. They give us their opinion on the property, what they can resell it for. And then after we buy the property, then we list the property with them to resell it. But so we're going through an escrow or a title company or an attorney, whatever that state requires, and getting title insurance on the purchase. So that sometimes takes a little bit of time to go through that process. But we close on them cash and buy them ourselves, generally. And then we do some minor value add stuff sometimes. It just depends on the property. Each property is different. We might do stuff like clearing some brush, clearing some paths through the property. We might get a survey done. We might get a perk test done. Sometimes if it's a larger property, we can do, say, like a minor subdivision, break it up into five lots. And a lot of these states, it's simply a matter of like hiring a surveyor to go out there and kind of break it up on paper. And then we'll sell off those lots individually. But the whole goal is to buy them right, so then we can list them at an aggressive price on the market with the real estate broker, and cleaned up or whatever we need to do on that to make it retailable. And then we'll sell them quickly. So our average hold time is about 60 days. So that's the business model. Pretty simple, buying and selling.
Yeah, so the goal is buying off market and then selling on market,
Yep,
essentially.
exactly.
Passive investors in real estate are able to receive a check every month. Some people call that mailbox money. We say money really does grow on trees. Visit the website at biggerpictureholdings.com, where we have a ton of free resources to help you learn more about planting your very own money tree.
I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure the
Sure,
viewers
fire
will have
away.
the same questions. So you mentioned you're mailing out 50,000 letters a month on average. So how do you, like, where did you start? And then, how are you at 50,000 now? And how are you scaling that?
Just gradually ramped up over time. Our first mailer that I did was 10,000, so that's basically $5,000 worth of mail. So and then I've just gradually ramped that up over time, and trying to probably ramp it up a lot higher in the future. But yeah, so we try to get ourselves established in a certain area, And then once we get established in a certain area, you get some contacts on the ground, some good people to work with, then we'll really try to really work that area. You know, we'll mail it every few months or something like that. But
that's cool. So what markets are you focused on right now?
Yeah, most of our stuff is on the East Coast, all the way from New York all the way down to Florida. So really? There's a lot you know, states in there that we're trying to work, you know, these different areas. But yeah, so yeah, I mean, our main thing is we like to look for areas where there's some good activity in the land market. And when I mean good activity, means there's sales where there's not a overabundance of listings. So, you know, if the sales, for instance, I'll look at a certain county, you know, in one of these states, and then I'll, you know, this could be on Zillow or something like that, where I'll do this research. I don't even have to have access to the MLS. So I can filter by land and I look for whatever criteria we're looking at. Say it could be 10 acres plus, and see how many listings are in that particular county. Say there's 50 listings. And then I look over the past 12 months, how many pieces of land, 10 acres plus within that criteria, you know, sold in the last 12 months. And if it's 50, then that's a pretty balanced market. If there's only 10 properties that sold over the last year, then that's a pretty not so good market. You know, that's pretty stagnant. I mean, there's a lot of oversupply of inventory, which means it's not impossible to sell in those markets, but it's a lot harder. You've got to be a lot more aggressive on your pricing, and you've got to make sure you've got some really, really good properties too. So yeah, the kind of marginal stuff is harder to sell in those areas. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So my background is construction management. So I studied mechanical engineering and then went into construction management and got to help build a 26-story building in basically downtown Dallas, Texas.
Wow.
you know, so with you being in suburban areas, I guess, or even rural areas.
Mostly. Yeah.
Mostly suburban. Rural.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to worry too much about like environmental testing or, you know, a lot of stuff being in the ground. That's potentially harmful, I guess, do you?
Yeah. Yeah. Most of the time we're not doing anything in depth like that. It's most of these rural areas. I mean, the big things they look for are, you know, to make it buildable, I guess, would be like, can you get a septic system there? You know, because most of these areas are not connected to any sewer. And then, you know, other considerations are, you know, wetlands, obviously, FEMA flood zone could be, stuff like availability of utilities, things like that are kind of the main, you know, and zoning as well. So, but most of these rural areas are pretty lax as far as building goes. You know, as long as you can get a septic system, they're pretty good with it, and find a decent site on the property where it meets the setback requirements and that kind of stuff, you're going to be good. So
that's really cool. So I know you mentioned you do slight value add. Are you also, have you ever gone in and put, you know, utilities and all the plumbing and built streets on any of the deals or anything like that? Is that something maybe long-term that you'll be looking at?
I haven't really done running utilities, but we're just kind of working on one right now. There's a property we subdivided, 75-acre property, and we split it up into five parcels. And it's kind of a long, narrow rectangle parcel. And the only way to really split it up right was to put a road going along the one border, and you know, that was just on the map, but we decided to go ahead and get that road done so we could sell the properties for more, basically. So it's just a gravel road, but it still requires the you know, the grading and some drainage and stuff like that, and it's still a lot of money for this gravel road because it's, you know, probably half a mile long or something like that. So so yeah, some minor stuff like that. I mean, I try to stay away from stuff that's going to take a long time to do, because part of our business model is just selling quickly. So, and I've noticed the longer I hold something, the less profitable it's going to be, whether it's holding for, you know, to get some approval on something or do some type of construction work. It seems like I always make out better if we can just sell things quickly and don't get into all that stuff. But you know, if the market's really appreciating as you're holding these things, then it probably really makes sense to kind of work on some of those things like that. But right now, I'd rather just sell them as quickly as I can.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So as I mentioned before, you know, we always want to be educating listeners. So what's something that you wish you would have done differently in your real estate journey?
Well, I wish I would have gotten into land flipping way before I did. I mean, I... you know, the best time to invest, it would be, you know, when everyone's running away from investing. So when the market crashed in the early, you know, to 2007 and 2009, that was when a lot of investors got out of the market, but really that was the time to get in the market. So anyone that bought back then, you know, made out very, very well. So, you know, and it spooked me off from real estate, and I knew better, you know, I knew that was the time to buy and everything like that. But for some reason, I just didn't do it because I didn't, you know, I didn't have enough life experience, I guess, at that point to be able to really compartmentalize things and really kind of look at the big picture. But, you know, so that's a big mistake I made, but, you know, I'm happy with where things are at and everything, but if I could have definitely done that, it would have produced a lot better results.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like that you said big picture. My company's name is Bigger Picture Holdings.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm always thinking about the bigger picture, man.
It's serious, you know, and I think about that same kind of concept, and it's the same thing with a lot of people make decisions based off of the short term rather than the long term. And the ones that are making the decisions off the long term will obviously do much better over time. And, you know, the people making all the short term decisions really can't understand why they're not getting ahead. But
exactly. Yeah. And when you said, you know, you wish you would have bought in the downturn, obviously, you know, we're experiencing some trials right now in capital markets yeah. and interest rate rising and everything. And I think a lot of people are scared, you know, and some real estate investing, you know, markets, you should be scared. And
right.
in some asset classes, you should be scared. I would say maybe
right.
office, you know, it might
yeah.
be a scary time as well. But ultimately, there's still good deals to be had. And I would say like people that have capital sitting around, you know, there's about to be some really good deals in the near future.
Yeah, yeah, I would imagine. And it's hard to say, you know, exactly what that's going to look like. Obviously, the market is shifting and changing right now. And do I think there's going to be a crash? Not really like there was back then, because things are completely different. I could be wrong. Maybe there will be some sort of collapse like there was back then, but there truly, it was a collapse of the real estate market. And that was a rare event. It's not like every downturn in real estate is going to be like that one. I know that's the most recent big thing that we had.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just wait and see. There's too many variables to know exactly how things are going to play out. And if someone is telling you exactly like, oh, this is what's going to happen, you should probably be concerned because they don't know. They may think they know, but they don't know.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. Well, so the last two things to touch on. So wanted to hear, you know, lesson learned, maybe a deal that you wish you had not gotten in, or maybe something that you've heard about somebody else, you know, getting ripped off, or just something to be cautious about in real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a number of deals, and this is kind of played out a couple of ways. The problem properties for me always seem to be the smaller and the cheaper properties. The bigger properties seem to be go smoother and have less problems. It just seems like that's the way it is in real estate. If you deal with the kind of the low end properties, that's where your problems are going to be. If you deal with the higher end properties, those are, you know, you'll make more and you generally have less problems. So there was a couple lots that I bought, you know, I think we closed on them in 2022. So this has been after I've been in the business for like over a year or so. So I, you know, I had pretty good experience at that point. And, you know, they were just things that I got. I was a little overly optimistic on what I could resell them for. And I priced them too high to begin with. And then I gradually reduced them. The market corrected a little bit maybe since I bought them. But regardless, I was overly optimistic. And what ended up happening is I just ended up holding them forever. And then when it all was said and done, one of them I made like $100 on, one of them I made $500 on. So I didn't lose money. So no big horror story there, but they just took a lot of resources and time to sell. And it just, you know, it just wasn't just, they weren't worth it. So
right.
I think the big mistakes I made there were basically pricing, you know, them too high to begin with, being a little bit overly optimistic. It's better to kind of, take a decent profit rather than trying to hit a home run on some of these properties, you know?
Yeah, I think that's wise advice. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So lastly, want to shine the spotlight on you completely. What's your proudest accomplishment and some of the things that you're excited about moving forward in real estate?
Well, my proudest accomplishment, aside from real estate, is my family and my kids. So I'm
awesome.
Very happy with the way they've grown. Well, my older two are 22 and 20, and then I've got a 13-year-old. So I'm very proud of them and everything they've done. In fact, my two older ones showed some interest in land flipping and what we were doing. So we kind of sent some deals their way. They wanted to actually buy them themselves and go through the whole process and everything. So they started with $8,000 that they pulled together.
Okay.
And then after, I think they did five or six deals, and they've turned that $8,000 into $84,000. So yeah, so I'm pretty excited about them, and they're looking to really ramp things up this year and kind of do a lot of the outreach and stuff themselves and generate their own deals. But I just feel like they can take that knowledge that they've been gaining from this, and you know, the sky's the limit, really. So I'm just very proud of my kids, definitely. I guess it would be the main thing. So
I love that so much, Pete. Well, thank you so much for being a guest today, and I really loved your story, and I know the listeners will enjoy it as well.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, William. I really appreciate it.
Like and subscribe below. A new episode will air every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Are you looking for more content? Visit our website, biggerpictureholdings.com. And remember, money really does grow on trees.